Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Adventures on Infant Island, a podcast celebrating pop culture through the roars of a new generation. I'm your host, Mike Olivares, and together my co-host is...
Jenny Park.
Well, I know it's been a while since the last time we did a show. I think it was about 2 months since the last time we did it, and we figured it might be really, really good to go ahead and get back in on the horse and share with you a little bit about some stuff we've just been watching. But first, I just want to do a little catching up. How's everything going, Jenny?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah? Like anything you've been up to? Checking out anything cool or stuff that you hadn't done before?
I've been checking out a lot of new music.
Really?
Yeah. And also a lot of new films, but especially music.
Oh, I also think, too, you've been exposed to a lot of other things like, say, video games, too, right?
Yeah, definitely. Final Fantasy and all these other video games. Yes.
Okay, wow. You know, it's kind of cool being able to see this this type of stuff being exposed to Jenny, who has always been on the sidelines, I believe. But up until this time, you've actually been able to see all of this. But I can only imagine, because there's so much out there, to be kind of like an overwhelming thing. Have you found a game where you just want to stick around on it and take your time and not get distracted by all the other ones?
I'm pretty sure it's Final Fantasy VI out of all the other video games that I've kind of sampled here and there.
Yeah.
I think Final Fantasy VI is the winner for that.
Okay. And is there any reason as to why?
It just seems like I can, kind of take my time and just absorb the game and just have fun with it instead of, carelessly like rushing through like some of the other games.
Okay, I can totally see that. That's the beauty about RPGs. It's a lot of exploration.
And the most important thing is music. Music is really, really beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Done by Nobuo Uematsu.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. I love it.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, totally. Over on our end, for those of you guys who are not familiar, we also have another podcast called Combo Attack, which can be seen over at comboattackpodcast.wordpress.com, where we've been doing all sorts of stuff for October in celebration of Samhain, Halloween, what have you. And right now we're in the middle of taking care of, let me go ahead and get that, fix this. We went ahead and did a zombie episode just recently dealing with the Romero movies, the original zombie trilogy, and right now we're doing DVD picks, so I highly suggest giving it that a shot. And also right now we're working on a video game episode, which should be out sometime next weekend. So I'm looking forward to how that turns out, because we have ourselves a very special guest for that one. As for right now, back to Infant Island business. I wanted to go ahead and get started by discussing a duo of really, really cool movies, because guess what? We actually have ourselves something resembling a format this time, Jenny. Do you care to elaborate on that? What we're going to be looking at are going to be two properties, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to be basically taking two popular properties that are somewhat related to each other. We're going to go ahead and view them, reevaluate them, and then go ahead and show them to Jenny. And then Jenny will give us an idea of how she would approach them, as if which would she prefer out of these two very similar properties. This time around, we're going to be going into classic kaiju. We're talking about giant monsters this week, featuring two major superstars, Gojira and Gamera. But before that, I want to go ahead and give a little bit of background here regarding our love for giant monsters, which is probably a bigger habit of mine than probably Jenny's, but do you have any memories of like catching any of these kinds of movies, Gojira, Gamera at all, like growing up?
When I was little, I would have to say that I was exposed to Godzilla. I think I watched it with my family, but I guess my memory has became kind of vague over the years because I haven't seen it in so long, and now seeing it again was a very fresh experience, I would have to say.
Yeah, but when you watched them, did you watch them dubbed in English or another language?
I think I saw it in Korean once, and then I also saw it in English dubbed.
Oh, okay, yeah, it's pretty much the same way as I did. I grew up watching Godzilla films as a very young type because channels like KTLA, Channel 5, used to show them pretty often on the weekends, along with other shows that were licensed by a company called Sandy Frank, which has become a staple of Mystery Science Theater 3000 for many. Anyway, I would catch a lot of these dubbed, and not only would I catch that, I really was also taken by watching Johnny Socco and His Flying Robot, which used to show on Sunday mornings And so that introduced me to, you know, the works of Ishinomori-san, you know, guy who created Giant Robo. But really, it was all about Godzilla and Gamera, you know, and which case we're going to go ahead and go into right now. But it was just a massive thing, a massive event every year when you'd have a Godzilla marathon where they show back-to-back Godzilla movies all day. And I think it was between that Channel 5 and Channel 9 that did this. And it was just a big eye-opener for me as a kid, and I was super, super addicted. And ever since then, I've always had a curiosity towards going back into it and trying to watch it with older eyes and see what I didn't notice back then. Because in the end, when I was a kid, I just liked watching things blow up. I liked watching toys get mushed around. And, you know, how can one go without a giant monster? Anyway, let's go right into it. Right now, we look through all of these films. You know, the Kaiju Eiga has gone through so many permutations over the last 40-odd years. Oh, I would, 50-odd years now, actually. And looking, you know, we wanted to go ahead and take the time to go ahead and look into the roots of these types of films by looking at two of the most important names in the history of the Kaiju Eiga, by looking at two studios who went head-to-head with each other over time. One started a little bit later than the other, but the one that really started it all in the post-war period and really established itself as a genre with one movie, that was Toho Studios. And that was around 1954 when Ishiro Honda got together a group of people and said, we're going to do ourselves a great monster movie. And it came out in the form of Gojira, which, you know, obviously was translated to the name Godzilla. And now that I think about it, it's a little bit weird. But the film itself is a – let's see if I can break it down. I mean, it's simple plot. You've got leaders and scientists scrambling to save the nation of Japan after what seems to be a series of ocean disasters, and it reveals itself to be a giant radioactive lizard born out of years of atomic testing. So the whole film is all about – it starts off as a bunch of mysterious ship disappearances, which, of course, is anything but, and only grows worse, and, of course, revealing these, who is now known as the king of the monsters, Godzilla. Tell me, what are your impressions of Godzilla, personally, just the film overall?
Now that I've seen it again with fresh new eyes, it was very interesting to see a lot of, like, layers in the movie, like, for instance, the political issue of, you know, what Japan was going through after, you know, World War II and whatnot because of the atom bombs and how it affected the nation of Japan. And I realized that it's really important to see those layers. And it's not just a scary monster movie. That's what I used to think when I was growing up watching that movie. I thought it was just, you know, being scared by this huge monster that you will never see with your own eyes in real life. But the thing is, it's not just about the monster. It's about what it can do if you don't watch out as a nation. Mm. So there's like, you know, more deeper things going on now.
Right.
You know. Yeah, as I'm, you know, watching it with, you know, new set of eyes.
I mean, and it's interesting too, considering the fact that when Toho brought it over here internationally, they in order to help us American viewers better understand the film, they intercut scenes with Raymond Burr as a newspaper man, and basically there were more English speaking actors and roles. And the Japanese were kind of on the sidelines, and it was a very strange kind of mix. So when I was a kid, I was always kind of like, I don't understand where Perry Mason fits into this. I don't understand how Ironside makes any sense with this. And sure enough, you know, growing up and realizing that the original Godzilla didn't have that at all, and then watching it again, and then realizing, wow, this is a very special movie. Even by today's standards, you look at it now, and yes, while on the surface it's a horror film, it pretty much ranks up there like with like many of the classic horror films, where it's not just potent for the scares. It is also potent because it actually has more on its plate. It actually has something important to say. And it's exciting to consider the fact that it came out in 1954, only a scant few years into the post-war period. And I can only imagine what kind of effect it might have had on Japanese viewers. Pretty profound kind of thing. So That's one of the two films that we need to consider here. Now, going a little bit further into the future, flashing forward to 1965, we're going to deal with Daiei Studios, which had long been wanting to do their own monster film, and finally did by getting a hold of or working with Noriaki Yuasa, who went on to direct his foray into the kaiju eiga world by making a flying turtle movie. Yes, making Daikaiju Gamera. Of course, this is also made in black and white, not unlike Gojira, but it's a slightly different story. So let me go ahead and put this on here for you. It's an expedition in the Arctic, right? It's interrupted by an air battle between U.S. and Soviet fighters. Meanwhile, on the Arctic ice, there's a Japanese expedition happening with the Inuit people who witnessed this battle. Anyway, one of the fighter planes is actually shot down, carrying potentially nuclear weapons. Surprise, surprise. And that explosion ends up opening a crack in the ice, which awakens a giant turtle, which, of course, is going to wreak havoc, naturally, on Japan. But what's a little bit weird about this thing is not only is it a turtle, it can also fly. So, again, you have a slightly cheekier kind of take on the giant monster movie and a very strange film if you really think about it. Any impressions on the Daikaiju Gamera, Jenny?
Well, I think it's like a different kind of impression compared to Godzilla. Godzilla seemed, you know, more serious, but Gamera, it's a lot of fun, you know. Mm. And I don't know what other people think, but for me, it was just a lot of fun. And yeah. And I just love Gamera because he's so adorable, even though he's supposed to be this threatening thing.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things because the idea itself, you know, doesn't lend itself to being terrifying as of, say, looking at Gojira, which clearly looks like, I don't care, I'm mad, and I'm going to eat you all.
And I don't think I could take Gamera too seriously. I mean, even though they make it seem as if he could eat you alive, I'm like, how can this cute little thing destroy you? And I just can't imagine what Gamera can do. He's just too cute. But with Godzilla, I felt scared. I felt that he can really tear you apart. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Serious and fun.
Okay, so I guess maybe what we're looking at here, even though they were both firsts, before both films spawned these series where very often the monster was the hero fighting off alien invaders or mutations, creations of pollution, monsters from other islands and such. You know, looking at it now, there is a very big disconnect between the original horror piece that is Gojira and then the more fun piece as Gamera. In a weird way, it's almost like the way horror movies in America went. You went from being really serious to really kind of campy in the 80s. You started in the 70s with Slasher and you took it seriously. But then by the 80s, it all became a joke and everyone was just kind of having fun with it. Maybe it's the same thing. Anyway, we want to go ahead and go right into the comparison of both films. First, we're going to be talking about Gojira in terms of the action, because you have like the work of Eiji Tsuburaya, who is like the master of the art form called tokusatsu, which is the art of Japanese visual effects. We're talking incredible model work and incredible miniature work, from vehicles to buildings, and then right on down to the suits designed for the monsters. Both Gojira and Gamera have pretty impressive use of this style of action filmmaking. In your mind, which one? I mean, let's talk about Gojira a little bit, and then let's talk about Gamera, and tell me what you think about both of those.
As far as action is concerned,
yeah.
I think like what I mentioned earlier, with Gojira, he seems threatening. You know, and the way he moves, the way he attacks, the way he appears to be, all those things, you can't help but to feel threatened by it because, you know, his moves are very serious, you know, and he does them carefully. And there's more mystery to it, so you get more scared because you don't know what he's going to do. He's very unpredictable.
Yeah. It's like a force of nature, right? Almost like a natural disaster.
But
in
with
a way.
Gamera, the thing is, you kind of know what he's going to do. You kind of know, you know, in your imagination what he can and cannot do. Yeah. So it wasn't very threatening at all. His moves are very goofy and fun. And you're like, wow, you know, that's kind of cute. You know, the flying saucer and all that stuff. That's my favorite. But how can you take that so seriously? You know, you can't possibly, like, kill millions of people and threaten them.
I think my thing is that Gojira seemed to move with purpose. Like, he knew what he was aiming for and went for it. Whereas Gamera, you know what, my props to all the guys who worked on that movie and the commentary on that new DVD that was put out by Shout Factory. Beautiful job in detailing the kind of work that went into it. But at the end of the day, Gamera looks like he's just sort of stumbling around and doesn't really know what he's doing.
And also, Gamera seems kind of random. Yeah. And when he's just moving, he seems like he's just doing these weird dances, you know? that just kind of stuck in my head for a while.
I kept thinking he was like that drunken guy walking home from the bar in the middle of like 2 in the morning. You know, he's kind of lumbering on the side.
And then I also love his backpack.
Yeah, yeah. I think MST3K said it best when they called Gamera Godzilla with a backpack.
I think that really makes sense. I don't know. For me, Gamera's moves were pretty goofy. Mm.
Well, how about the destruction of the buildings and all that stuff?
The thing that comes to mind right now is the lighthouse.
In Gamera?
In Gamera, yes. Yeah, sorry about that. But I think it was like towards the beginning, mm-hmm. if I can remember correctly, where you know, he just like kind of touches the lighthouse and it just like falls. Yeah. That's so goofy and funny at the same time. Yeah, I like it, even though it's goofy.
Yeah, and you notice that even though both films feature the Tokyo Tower being toppled by our respective monsters, there's something about the original Gojira where the tower is being knocked over with all the news people on it that was so much more frightening and so much more effective. Whereas Gamera, they had no time or no budget. I don't know what they did. Either way, he just sort of accidentally knocks it over.
and with Gamera, you know, he seems a little clumsy. Like, for instance, he's like, you know, stomping on a building. You can't imagine, or you can't help but to imagine him saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, I knocked over your building. Sorry about that. That was just an accident."
These are your homes. Oh, my bad.
I don't know what it is, but just thinking about that makes me laugh. And he is very clumsy compared to Godzilla. Like what you were saying, Godzilla has an aim, so he does it carefully. So it doesn't seem, you know, like a funny, clumsy action compared to Gamera.
There's just something awesome about that bit where he goes to the train cars, you know, he starts, you know, tossing him around more or less, and he breaks through the electrical array or the wires. All that stuff is just really, really super
and
cool.
And also one other thing that I liked about what Gamera did was when the flying saucer went to New York, you know, it blew off the building. It kind of reminded me of 9/11.
Oh, you're talking about the air traffic control tower. That's the most brutal thing that Gamera does in the entire film. See, the thing is, Gamera never really exudes a sense of menace. I never really feel terribly threatened by him. But there is one moment in the film where he buzzes an air traffic control tower. And just as soon as some of us in the audience want to make a quip regarding the, you know, Maverick and Top Gun and stuff like that, the turtle goes ahead and just blows the entire top off the damn thing, and it just looks brutal.
And then while watching that, 9/11 came to mind, and I'm like, wow, this Gamera seems like it's way ahead of its time. By 50 years.
It's a pretty phenomenal sequence, but, you know, regardless of how I personally feel about the action in Gamera, it does have some pretty impressive moments. And besides, where else are you going to see a turtle taking flight? That's just too awesome. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move right on into the next section here, which is going to be discussing the human casts of both of these films. We spent enough time on the environments and on the monsters themselves that we can go ahead and dive into talking about the cast. Initially, we can go ahead and talk about the human cast in Gojira first, and then discuss the qualities of both that and the cast of Gojira. I want to go ahead and start a little bit by mentioning the head cast that consisted of Akira Takarada, Momoko Kochi, Takashi Shimura, and Akihiko Hirata. And I remember Akira Takarada plays Ogata, who is like a researcher, who's kind of like an everyman. He's you know, more or less in love with a famous scientist professor's daughter, played by Momoko Kochi. She plays Emiko, and the story is that, you know, as the Gojira menace begins to take shape and become a bigger threat to Japan, it becomes one of those situations where, despite the fact that, you know, the main female lead's father is this famous scientist, there's that sort of feeling of never being able to live up to this man's wishes, especially when the famous professor has actually recommended another scientist to be his daughter's husband. And right away, you have yourself a little, like, you know, kind of a soap opera subplot happening beneath all the stomping and all the screaming. What are your thoughts on the cast of Gojira?
I think the cast was very brilliant. They did it carefully. You can totally tell. The arc of Emiko was really impressive to me. And like what you were saying about the soap opera-ish subplot, you know, in the midst of the madness, I thought that was brilliant. They didn't, like, make it, like, unrealistic or anything. It was very realistic to me. And I was able to feel convinced of, you know, all of the characters in Godzilla.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, most of the time when we see a lot of these, you know, rubber monster movies, it's easy for us to get kind of distracted by all the action and all the explosions and all the stomping and stuff. But what's so cool about Gojira is that the human characters are every bit as important as what's going on out there. You know, we have that little subplot going on, but then we have the even bigger one, which is to deal with, you know, the real threat and the difficulty that it is to deal with the threat, because there's an emotional problem at stake as well. And I just want to, you know, give extra props to Kochi Momoko for playing that lead, because you got to think, this is 1950s Japanese film. And this is kind of like the heyday of the beginning of the Japanese film industry having, you know, a nice little array of female stars. And her performance is quite wonderful, especially since it's so conflicted.
And she seems, the woman that played Emiko, Momoko Kochi, her acting seemed very convincing and realistic and very natural. You can feel that, you know, she's being Emiko. You completely forget that she's Momoko Kochi, an actress, you know, and I'm, like, very, like, absorbed to this Emiko character.
Well, so, isn't it really so much that she's, the character is actually torn between two people?
That's another thing. There's drama and, you know, tension and mystery, you know. They did that really well.
And, oh, also, let's go ahead and throw this in. One other binding polymer between both the Gojira and Gamera films is that both films feature an elder scientist that is more or less tasked with the hopes of either capturing the beast or destroying it. And in Gojira, Yamane, you know, Hakase, Professor Yamane, played by Takashi Shimura, and his arc is pretty fascinating as well. You know, he's so busy, you know, trying to more or less save humanity, and yet he doesn't know that his daughter is, you know, more or less in love with one of his assistants, even if he would prefer that she get shacked up with this other very well-respected but probably insane scientist. And it makes for some interesting drama. Which we'll discuss later in terms of story later. But let's move right into Gamera and talk about the human characters there. Well, the human cast for Gamera is kind of strange, because even though if you look at it on the surface, it looks very similar to the cast of Gojira, there's some very distinct differences, and I think a lot of it's attributed to the script. Because even though we do have the elder avuncular scientist, and we do have an assistant, you know, but this time it's in the form of a woman played by Harumi Kiritachi. The professor is played by Eiji Funakoshi, who is a long distinguished actor from the era. Anyway, is Professor Hidaka. That's the professor in Gamera. His entire arc is based on the idea of, well, just trying to stop it. There's really no conflict. But this time around, you also have a reporter following this duo around, Aoyagi, played by Junichiro Yamashiko, who basically follows them around with no real clear reason. He almost feels like a stalker, actually. He kind of has a crush on the professor's assistant. He keeps calling her his goddess of luck. And meanwhile, back in Japan, we also have another pair of characters in the form of Nobuyo Sakurai, who's a beautiful young actress named Michiko Sugata, and also her little brother, Toshio, played by Yoshiro Uchida. And, everybody knows who Toshio is for those people who are actually familiar with Gamera in America, an infamously named character that a lot of people know of as Kenny. Don't forget that. Kenny. The name will haunt you forever. Kenny. Anyway, any thoughts on the cast of Gamera, Jen?
I think the cast on Gamera, you know, didn't really appeal to me as much as the ones from Godzilla. Not because they were bad. They were good in their own way. But still, you know, I couldn't really feel convinced, you know, of all the characters in Gamera. They seem more silly and goofy and somewhat out of place, especially the woman that played Kyoko Yamamoto, yeah. Named Harumi Kiritachi, right? She seemed sort of out of place. She seemed a little bit bored and tired.
Yeah.
And I just felt that she didn't really belong there.
Yeah, I kept saying, man, she dresses really nice. I mean, she'd be more comfortable in a Fantastic Plastic Machine album, but not necessarily in a kaiju film.
I think she's just better off as a model or a singer or something.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't see her as an actress. As Kyoko Yamamoto, I just couldn't do it.
And how about Funakoshi playing the Professor Hidaka?
Professor Hidaka, he has some good, you know, good things, and he was able to bring some stuff to the table, but it wasn't as heavy as the gentleman that played Yamane Hakase, because his arc didn't seem that convincing to me. And also he lacked passion, for one. He lacked passion, definitely. And I just couldn't, like, you know, feel for him at all. It seemed like he was just doing his job, and I just couldn't, like, relate to him or feel for him or anything.
Okay, which leads me to ask you about Aoyagi-san, the reporter that followed them around. Thoughts?
Stalker.
That's it. Nothing else. I mean, he was a handsome actor. I will say that.
I mean, he's a good-looking guy, but it didn't. I don't know why. It seemed like he wasn't really doing much.
Yeah.
He was just there. Oh, hi. I'm pretty. I'm handsome. Girls, pretty girls. Look at me.
Yeah.
He didn't seem necessary
yeah.
for the plot to go on.
Yeah. I think he only has like one thing to do in the entire film, which we'll get to in a moment. But he only does one thing, and
much for an hour and 20-minute movie.
Yeah. It's seriously.
We need more.
All right, then let's go right down to the Sakurais. You know, little Toshio Sakurai and his pet turtle, and him losing his pet turtle and thinking that Gamera is actually his pet turtle turned gigantic. Let alone the fact that Toshio is gone insane because of the loss of his mother, and is more or less his older sister, Nobuyo, is more or less his guardian. You know, she basically plays the atypical Ane-san type character. You guys all know who that is. If you guys are familiar with anime at all, it's the Kasumi Tendo character, basically. Just doting and doing her best to take care of her erstwhile brother. Thoughts on these characters?
Well, I just feel that they could have done a lot more with Nobuyo.
Yeah.
That's the thing. She had a decent arc compared to a lot of these other characters that we just mentioned. But, you know, even then they didn't give her enough to do.
Yeah.
You know, something was missing. That little ingredient. I don't know what it is. I still have to think about that. But that was missing.
I think that, you know what it is? I think that the actress that they had to play Nobuyo, Michiko Sugata, she went on to become a pretty popular actress in her own right after this film for a very short period of time. However, I think that she had it. Like, she has just the natural aura about her, an incredible energy that's completely missing in Harumi Kiritachi. It's just, she's very luminous. Problem is, the filmmakers don't know what to do with her.
And also, Nobuya looks too perfect. I mean, with Emiko, she's believable because she has that natural appearance. You feel that she's like a girl next door and she's, you know, experiencing, you know, these problems between these two men and her father, you know, yeah. As far as her romantic life is concerned. But with Nobuyo, she's a little too cleaned up and too perfect, so I just feel that I can't feel convinced that she is this guardian for little Toshio.
Yeah, and Toshio himself, played by Yoshiro Uchida. Any thoughts on him?
Johnny's Junior.
Okay, guys. Can you help explain this, Jenny? The connection that Uchida has to Johnny's. Explain.
Well, he was in a boy band. Johnny's Jimusho or Johnny's Junior. They're famous for creating boy bands like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys kind of deal. And our young boy Toshio Sakurai, played by Yoshiro Uchida, he was in this boy band called Four Leaves in the early 70s, but yeah. Things didn't work out.
But, you know, I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, our Toshio, Kenny, went on to an interesting recording career and now runs a cafe and sings French songs. But back in these days, you know, we all saw him as just this crazy kid, increasingly so. And they tried their best to kind of soften this performance in the American version by making it seem much more innocent. But when you watch it in Japanese, it's a completely different experience. And in a weird way, the character is not sympathetic at all. He doesn't really seem to have anything to do with the plot other than to kind of muck things up for our heroes a little bit. It's a creepy, creepy idea that it's hard to believe it actually went into a kaiju eiga for anything. But, I mean, any thoughts as to his performance?
Toshio was just a crazy kid, period. Just the way he, you know, talks and the way he does things, he's just a crazy kid. He needs treatment. But I don't know. I mean, I just felt that you know, Toshio's crazy, but I just couldn't help but to feel a little bit sorry for him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe he just went cuckoo because he lost his mother at such a young age, and, you know, and that could do a lot for a young kid.
Yeah,
you know,
it just feels really strange in a monster movie, though. I just have to say, it does seem out of place.
Yeah, I could agree with that, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it wrong kind of character at the wrong time, but still, grates on your nerves like nothing else. Once they bring Toshio on screen, if you've never seen the film, run.
I think you know, Toshio's like psycho act is kind of overdosed, meaning, you know, they gave him too much to do as far as making him look like a crazy psycho kid,
especially considering the fact that at the end of the film he's completely fine.
Yeah, that was kind of hard to believe. I'm like, now that your Gamera's gone, you want to be a scientist and you seem perfectly happy and normal. What happened? Did you get a treatment and we didn't know about it?
Did they cut it from the film?
That's what I was like thinking about, actually. And it was just kind of unconvincing, very unconvincing.
Okay, well, which leads us to story. So we're going to go ahead and just do a quick rundown. You know, we more or less covered the finer points of both films. But I'm just going to go ahead and ask Brass Tacks, Jenny, in terms of story, which one did you prefer?
This is a tough question because I kind of like both of them in their own way. But in terms of story, if I have to really pick, Godzilla.
And why is that?
Because it has so much to say. It actually makes sense. You know, you're not distracted by, you know, this gigantic monster doing cute little silly goofy things. You could actually take it seriously. Yeah. The arc of the characters, the script, you know, the way the characters communicate to each other, you know, and all the layers, like politically and historically, like what I was talking about earlier, they all make sense to me. So I just feel that overall Godzilla, you know, has it better than Gamera as far as story is concerned overall.
Yeah, and so in terms of Gamera, like what happens there in terms of the story that makes you kind of go, oh, not quite so much with it?
I just feel distracted. I mean, I instead of like getting excited about the story and the mystery and for the characters and also for what is going to happen, instead I'm just saying, oh, Gamera's so cute, Gamera's so cute. And then I don't even think about the story and what is happening. I just feel like things are happening for the sake of happening, not because it needs to. And it seems like the plot, you know, just kind of goes everywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, you know, stick through from beginning to end.
Yeah.
That's what's missing.
Yeah. You know? I mean, honestly, I mean, Honda and his crew came up with a masterstroke with the ethical decision or the ethical dilemma that was put forth by Serizawa Hakase. That's the scientist played by Akihiko Hirata, the man who was originally intended to wed Emiko. He discovers an oxygen destroyer kind of bomb that could potentially stop Godzilla once and for all. But the problem is that his dilemma is if he does let it out there, that other interests will want to use it for war and basically start everything over again. Once again, bringing back, echoes of, Einstein and Oppenheimer, the atom bomb and all of that. And, it brings the entire film to a head. Suddenly you have this dilemma. Do we use this because it might be the only thing that could save us? Or do I keep it a secret? And, you know, what do I do? Or do I sacrifice myself so that my work is never followed? That's something that Gamera never attempts to reach and never attempts to go there. And it's a pretty, even now, I think, it's even more potent than probably ever before. And very makes it important for people to watch, I think, of all ages to watch it. In fact, I think Godzilla is so good that I think it should be required viewing.
And also Godzilla has, like, dilemmas.
Yeah.
You know, like what you were just saying with Serizawa and all these other characters. And there's some kind of unpredictability, and you just can't help but to, like, be anxious about it and also... feel for the characters and root for them,
yeah.
You know. But with Gamera, you don't know who to really root for, mm-hmm. and if you are, you don't know why. You know, there's no real purpose. It seems like with certain characters in the Gamera film.
Okay, so it's time. All right, you're at a video store late at night, and there's only a few picks left, and you had to pick a kaiju movie for the night because your friends are asking for it. Out of the two, which one would you pick?
Godzilla, definitely, hands down.
Yeah.
They need to see it. Especially the original. Not the other Godzilla, or especially the American one.
Oh, God.
I mean, as long as it's not that, I'll be fine. But this original, every Godzilla fan has to see it. Or every, you know, monster movie fan has to see it. It's historical, it's awesome, it's great. You know, and I recommend this movie to everybody that's interested in monster films.
And then in terms of Gamera, like, would you recommend that for certain people? And if so, who?
If people are into, like, silly, you know, action, you know, and cute things, then they'll go for it. Because Gamera is a cute monster. Unlike Godzilla. Godzilla is threatening and scary, and you're like, oh, you know, I better watch out for that thing because yeah. I might get killed. But Gamera is just kind of adorable for a monster.
And let's not forget, Gamera is the friend to all children.
Yeah, so if you're young or if you are young at heart, I definitely recommend this. Or if you, especially if you have children, you know, then definitely I recommend this. And maybe your children might fall in love with Gamera because he's such a cute thing that all children love.
Only thing is, just make sure your kids understand not to do what Toshio does, please.
Yes, definitely, because Toshio is a little bit weird.
All right, well, I think that'll do it for today's episode. Hopefully we'll be back pretty soon, much sooner than normal. We're going to actually keep this format going on from here on out. We're going to be taking two popular titles and putting them head-to-head, and then probing Jenny's brain and see what we think. And For Adventures on Infinite Island, my name is Mike, and this is Jenny, and hope you all have a great October, and have a safe Halloween. Everybody, take care.
Take care. and please listen. Thank you.
And watch out for monsters. Hey everybody, just a reminder, if you like what you heard today, by all means check out our previous episodes at infantislandpodcast.blogspot.com. Once again, that's infantislandpodcast.blogspot.com.